This is
Make It Kind.
M.I.P.
with Masamela Matfumo.
Mark Thompson.
Make It Kind.
Get woke.
New from Radiotopia presents Red for Revolution, an audio drama about Black love, queer romance, and liberation. Join Jasmine, an 18-year-old navigating her queer identity while learning about her grandmother's secret love affair. Through her discoveries, we're transported back to 1971 to witness two remarkable women embark on a romance that defies all conventions. Subscribe to Radiotopia Presents and listen to Red for Revolution wherever you get your podcasts.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of Thursday Coast with the founder of the largest online progressive community there is, DailyCoast.com. Marcos Melissas joins us from the left coast once again. Hey, buddy, how was your Thanksgiving?
It was great. How was yours?
Very nice, very nice. Very quiet. Spent some time with Reverend Jackson in Chicago, and he is recovering much better than people expected. So prayer does change things. We're thankful to everyone for that. Please keep him in your prayers. But yeah, it was cool, and watched with bated breath Tuesday night. I got a call from family at Tennessee State, where my Tennessee State hooded today too, y'all look at that.
Got a
call from family at Tennessee State, and the precinct closest to Tennessee State, Hadley Park, I was told at a late Tuesday afternoon, had three times as many voters as it had in the last election. Black precinct. Now, which also pointed out something you had said to me. When they do this, when Republicans do this redistricting, it's not always even perfect for them, because Nashville was still in there, in Afton Baines, in that 7th district, which is why it was so close.
Yep.
Of course, we wanted a victory, but sometimes there are victories. Speaking to Reverend Jackson, he always said, we won at times when he didn't even win the presidential election. You know, he said, we won our self-respect. We still had a win. Did we win anything from Tuesday night anyway, Marcos?
Yeah, so we first spoke about this race, I don't know, what, a month ago?
Yes.
4 weeks ago, and I was very clear that we were not going to win this. Had we won this, it would have been a cataclysm of epic proportions. Trump won this district 60 to 38. It was a 22-point Trump victory margin. Those seats don't change hands, right? So the problem wasn't, are we going to win or lose? The question was, are Democrats overperforming Republican numbers, Trump numbers, and what does that mean for next year? So we saw in an election in November, in the off-year elections in New Jersey, in Virginia, in, you know, Georgia, and places like that, the Democrats just swept. They literally won everything on the map. They even won seats in Louisiana that nobody thought were even, or Mississippi that we didn't even know were like a thing, right? Because it was such a shocker. So we already knew that Democrats were overperforming, but we didn't have, we didn't think it was as dramatic as what Tennessee sort of showed us, right? So polling showed that the race was going to, you know, within a few points. I never thought we were going to win. I didn't think it was possible to win that seat, but that wasn't the question. The question was going to be, what is the margin? Now, the Democratic candidate, she's not a DSA candidate, but she is about as, you know, liberal as you get in a, again, 22-point Trump district. If there was a candidate that Republicans should have been able to run up the margins on, it was Afton. And not only they did not run up the margins, she lost by single digits. And I think I said it on the show. I'm pretty sure, I know I wrote about it multiple times, that Republicans needed to contain that margin. They needed it to be a 20-point victory to be like, okay, whew, there's no blue wave starting to grow ahead of 2026. I said if it was in the mid double digits, or like if it was in mid teens, like 15%, Republicans were going to be concerned, but it was still going to be in the realm of like, this is not a 5-alarm fire. But if he had gotten to single digits, all bets were off. And that's what we saw. So we saw a 13-point Democratic shift. We saw that shift in every single county in that district, including the bloodiest of blood red districts possible. There is a shift, a double-digit shift in every single county in that district. If we see that level of overperformance next November, a 13-point shift, Democrats would win something like, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it's something like they win some like 45 seats, 45 to 50 seats next November. That would give them a like a 70-some point seat majority in the House. We absolutely take the Senate with that kind of margin. That's what Republicans are facing. So there's two consequences. One is Republicans are already starting to distance themselves from Trump. We're seeing this on the issue of Venezuela and the saber rattling in Venezuela. We're seeing this with Trump floated extending the ACA subsidies, and that was shot down by House Republicans. They're feeling emboldened to stand up to Trump. They're feeling that kind of pressure. They want to put some distance. So that's number one. Number two is that, and this is all speculative at this point, but we've seen House Republicans tell the political media with blind quotes that a lot of them want to quit. They're unhappy being yelled at by Trump. They can't put any distance, or Trump screams at them on Truth Social and threatens to primary them. Like, they're done. Like, and it's not fun. They want to tap out. I think this makes that more likely. I absolutely think that this puts the final nail in the coffin of Indiana redistricting, because no incumbent Republican wants more Democrats in their district. And when you redistrict the state to open up more Republican opportunities, what you're doing is you're diluting existing Republican states, right? In a normal year, totally fine. This is not going to be a normal political year. So Indiana already was saying no, that's dead. I actually think Florida backs off now, because Florida was talking about doing a redistricting session in their legislature, I think in February of next year. At this point, I would be surprised if they go ahead with that, because again, no incumbent Republican wants to dilute. And when you're talking a 13-point shift, you're looking at safe Republican seats suddenly in play, just like we saw in Tennessee 7. And let's not forget that Tennessee 7, not only did Republicans only win it by single digits, they dumped in millions of dollars to hold that seat. They had to have Mike Johnson went up there and campaign. Donald Trump called in at a rally, right? They went all out to keep it just a single-digit victory. They can't do that in all 435 seats next year. They can't do that in every R22, you know, a 22-point Republican district. They can't do that. So they understand that their majority is on the line. I suspect a lot of them just are going to assume it's toast and are going to start heading for the exits. They're going to try line up cushy jobs. And there is a very real chance, and this is not me saying it, this is an actual Republican telling Punchbowl News, that they would not be surprised if Democrats take the majority before the term is up.
Right. And that's what people were hoping. Afton would have cut into that number, obviously. Yep. But look, that seat will be back up again. It was very close for comfort for them. You know, I the retirements, it helped me with something, Marcos. People who are retiring, and we know these ambitious people with egos, it has to be really bad for them to make their decision, that kind of decision, doesn't it? I mean, that has to show. You know, you're not just giving up any job. I'm leaving the national legislature. I'm leaving the House of Representatives. I got to get gone.
Yeah.
That's, you know, and I don't know whether do these people, whenever they make those decisions, do they have something cushy lined up for themselves? I mean, but folks are like saying, yeah, I'm out. In MAGA land, in this MAGA moment.
This Tennessee 7 district was open because the Republican incumbent decided to go to a cushy private sector job. I think a lot of these people are looking right now, and they're heading for the exit. And it's it's decent money, but if you parlay the fact that you're a congressperson in that you can get some real good money, right? Whether it's lobbying on K Street, whether it's running a university, whether it's there's other opportunities that open up. I mean, it's a good resume builder, right? and if you have connections in the government, that's valuable to private industry, whether it's Wall Street, whether it's energy companies, anything that needs sort of lobbying or government affairs type of work, you're going to be valuable in that world. So a lot of these people, I mean, clearly, I think there's no doubt that they're out there shopping their resumes and seeing if anybody will pick them up. And if the opportunity presents themselves, they'll bail. Like, there's no loyalty. Trump has shown them no loyalty. And I think at this point, they're increasingly over it. There are the MAGA true believers, right? But Marjorie Taylor Greene, she was a canary in the coal mine. I mean, if she's like, I'm out, this is BS. There's a lot of people who don't have her platform, who don't have her influence and her fundraising abilities and her fan base. Why are they sticking around? Like, what? You're one of 435. You get no say in the matter. God forbid you say something that even remotely rubs Trump the wrong way. He's going to come after you like you're the devil. Like, it's just not fun anymore. And they're certainly not legislating. It's not like they're actually accomplishing things. I mean, that's another thing. If you're there and you're actually pushing your agenda, you know, that's something, but he's not even doing that. So there's only so much ego boosting you can get from that before you say like, I got better things to do with my life. I can either go make more money or I can legitimately go spend more time with my family, because a lot of these people are old. There are better things. So there are three Democratic open seats that need to be filled. So those are all going to be easy retentions. And we're going to have a House majority. I think it's three Republican seats, right? And if they have 5-6 retirements in the coming 6 months, Democrats continue to overperform in special elections in this way, things could look a lot different. And it would be something, Mark, if, like, it would be, I don't think it's ever happened. Maybe it's happened in the history, right? But I can't imagine of a single time when the House has switched parties without an election, without the November election precipitating that. That would be something. And, you know, Trump likes to talk about he's a record world holder, record holder at everything. I mean, that would be something if he it's the first president that precipitated a party control change in one of the chambers of Congress.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be something? But that says a lot. Marjorie Taylor Greene has been a star. Never would have expected her to do what she did. For her to drop out and say, I'm out.
Yeah.
If you're a regular schmegula, you got to think, well, what am I doing? I don't stand. I don't stand a chance if the dude comes for me.
Yeah.
Or if I have an original thought on my part.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's interesting. So, again, folks, people were, and you did say that, I remember you saying that we probably wouldn't win, but folk were hoping for it, of course. And she actually was a great candidate. She was, you're right, she's not Democratic Socialist of America, but she was right in the middle of the spectrum between Mamdani, I guess, and Abigail and Mikey. But you know what I said about that. See, we got to get over our problems that we think we have. If an Abigail and a Mikey and a Zoran can win on the same night, we don't have that many differences with each other.
Yeah,
we need to work that out, y'all. We need to get over up some of ourselves and some let it go. All right.
And you know what's really terrifying for Republicans is that a lot of special elections turn out to be a turnout affair, right?
Yes.
So Democrats have been overperforming in special elections, but it's because nobody knows it's an election time, and Democrats are much more motivated right now and will turn out at higher numbers. But then you get a general election and then you get normal turnout, right? So that's usually the way that Republicans cope with, or they have been coping with the Democratic overperformance this year. What's terrifying for them is that in Tennessee 7, turnout was at midterm levels. the Democratic performance was 110% higher than the last midterm, and Republican performance was about 90% of the 2022 midterm election. So you can't say like, it was a low turnout affair. Everybody turned out. And even though you had full turnout, Democrats shrunk that margin by 13%. And that is what has to be terrifying Republicans. Donald Trump's not going to be on the ballot. They can't depend on him to turn out his crazy base. Right. And you can't, you know, if you had a candidate that you could demonize easily in Afton, and they did everything they could, and even that did not save them from the tight margin. So this idea that they can culture war their way through 2026 and scream about trans people and, oh, look at the crazy Democrat. They tried all that stuff. It did not work. They won. Yeah, they won the election, but they lost tonight. And they know they lost tonight. And it was kind of funny because I just wrote a story, just went up, where Mike Johnson, the House Republican leader, it was spinning, you know, pretending that it was a big victory. And he called it a slight Republican lean district. What do you call it? He said, he said it's a slightly Republican district. So winning by 9 points is almost exactly on the nose of what we might expect. No, we might not expect that. We might expect that they win by 22 points like Donald Trump won. And that the previous incumbent, I think his name was Mike Rogers, he won by about 25 points. That's what you would expect in this district. So he was just flat out lying. But it was funny calling it a slight Republican district. But my favorite part of his spin was that he says, this quote, this reminded me a lot of Rep. Ron Estes. In 2017, Trump won his district by 27 points. Ron won a special election by almost identical circumstances by only 7 points. But then he came back next year in the midterm and he won by 20. Okay, congratulations, Ron Estes. You won by 20. What happened in 2017?
Right.
Democrats picked up 41 seats. So if he's saying this reminds me of 2017 under, quote, almost identical circumstances, like, the Republican might win Tennessee 7 by 20 points next year and whatever, who cares? As long as the Democrats have picked up 40, 50 seats, which is the direction we seem to be headed. So I'm not sure why he's talking about 2017 and 2018, because that was one of the worst Republican performance years. Of course, Donald Trump was president. I think next year it's going to be even worse than that. Democrats picked up 41 seats in 2018.
Yeah.
I think we're going to have an even bigger year. And we're not even 1 year into Trump's presidency. Issues of affordability are only going to grow. Inflation's only going to grow. Anger over the cruel immigration enforcement, that's going to grow. That's cut across outside of our world, Mark. It's not just Latinos and Democrats who are like political junkies who are upset about that. That stuff is cutting across. I mean, that is some fascist looking stuff with the masked ICE agents. All of this stuff, all that anger is only going to grow. Inflation's only going to get worse. There is zero plan with this administration to address rising costs. In fact, they're doubling down on tariffs and mass deportations, which only make inflation worse. They're going to get absolutely crushed. Yeah. And I made this prediction sort of in jest last year, but the way things are going, I wouldn't be surprised if Republicans are the ones that impeach Trump before this is all done and over.
No, man, come on. Really?
I mean, they're pissed. They're pissed. Well, if they get their asses whooped, they're going to need to distance themselves. They're going to need a hard reset.
Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion. It's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
A t-shirt and jeans, mac and cheese, oceans and sunsets. Some things in life are an obvious match, like RIAs and Schwab Advisor Services, the number one choice for independent advisors looking for a custodian who can help them go further. With all the wealth services, technology, and support an RIA firm needs, the difference is so obvious, it's Schwabious. Find your match and learn why custody is just the beginning at Schwabious.com.
So, okay, let me say this. So that's a good segue, because that's the next issue I want to raise with you. How big of a liability is Hegseth's kill order? Because that does seem to have people shook, even then. That is not a good look. Now, you know, countless times we have guessed what would be the last straw, what would be the breaking point, what would be the issue that they would actually, that would finish them or finish Trump or finish anybody like a Hegseth. And I don't want to get my hopes up, but this is pretty bad. And then you add to it by throwing the military staff under the bus.
Mm-hmm.
And the dude bragged about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you literally are then using the machine of war, the military assets, military staff, military people, military personnel, as toys, like we're doing a video game. That's literally what the man was doing.
Yeah.
What do you think that'll lead to?
It's a good question. The story has legs, Mark. And it's interesting. I got to say, it's always surprising what has legs and what doesn't have legs. And I don't know why, but this one seems to have resonated with Republicans in a negative way, where they're really starting to speak up more forcefully about it. And that's what's giving this thing legs. If it was just Democrats complaining about it, they just say we're weak and don't support our troops. And, you know, that would be that. But Ted Cruz has been strong on it. Rand Paul has just been on a frickin' tear about it. And it's clear that Republicans are on the defensive. I mean, you even had Donald Trump say, well, I wouldn't have ordered that. Like, I would not have done that. That in itself is the first sort of crack. And then he further said, but I believe Hegseth. He said that that's not what happened, right? Well, clearly as more reporting is coming out, and it increases the anger over it. Hegseth, I think his days are numbered. I mean, I don't know how he gets through this. Trump's probably, he should have fired Hegseth back during the Signalgate scandal, right? Like when...
Yeah, right.
But he didn't want to give the media the win, which, okay, well, now he's embarrassing you again, Donald. Like, you know, you got to get rid of incompetent a-holes from the administration. But the other piece is that Trump really cultivated a base on the fiction that he wanted peace, right? And this is his fixation on the Nobel Peace Prize and how he's just going to end all these wars. And while we may sort of laugh at the you know, how Trump himself is undermining that Nobel Peace campaign by literally starting a war for no reason against Venezuela, the reality is that there's a whole contingent of Trump supporters out there that bought into the notion that he was a president of peace and he wasn't going to get us involved in unnecessary wars. And that is exactly what he's doing right now. And they're confused. So you have conservatives that are pissed off on inflation, that he's losing on inflation. He's got some of them that he's losing on Epstein. Like, it's real. Like, there's real people who are abandoning MAGA because of Epstein. Now you got these peace MAGA types. Like, it's a thing. They exist. You know, peace MAGA types who are now questioning Trump on the issue of peace. Like, he is systematically going after all his core base supporters. Right. And then that's not even including that once you have his supporters, you're going to lose the ACA subsidies, which we've talked about before, which will disproportionately affect rural white MAGA supporters. He is very much undermining all his core base. And I don't know if it's because he's clearly he's not well, right? We see him. He's not all there. Like, it's dementia, it's Alzheimer's, whatever it is. He's not all there anymore. And so I don't know if his instincts have abandoned him, or maybe since he's not running for re-election, he just doesn't care. But he is really, really taking a bat to his core supporters. And that's why I think per Gallup, he now has the lowest approval rating ever as president, including his first term. I think they had him down at 37. I'd have to double check, but it's around there. And multiple polls have shown him at record lows. And there's still no bottom to that. Like, he's still, those numbers keep inching down. Mostly because of inflation. But things like this are undermining his strongest supporters. And if they're not cheerleading him, I think it also hastens his floor. His numbers will drop because they kind of help prop that up, not just because of their individual support, but because they're the loud supporters in their group of friends and social circles and stuff. And if they're like, yeah, F this Trump guy, like, he said he was for peace and now he's starting a war with Venezuela, that is going to fundamentally continue hurting his numbers.
Yeah, this is bad. I'm going to try to share this. This is from Daily Coast, Emily Singer's piece. Hegseth could have killed troops with signal chat leak. And that is coming from the Inspector General's report, which says Department of Defense Inspector General's report on the Signalgate scandal reveals the Secretary of State Pete Hegseth's actions endangered the lives of American troops by revealing key military data. So what we're really looking at is someone who is a child, right? Who's pretty much in that space playing with what he thinks is a toy.
Mm-hmm.
That's very dangerous, Marcos.
He never run any organization, period, much less a $1 trillion Pentagon. And he doesn't have the maturity. He doesn't have the expertise. He doesn't have the skill. He doesn't have the temperament for a job. And you're right. Everything has been a freaking video game for him. And even calling it the Department of War is a freaking joke. A name that well-known woke liberal Dwight D. Eisenhower implemented, and it's like, it baffles my mind how Trump thinks he deserves a Nobel Peace Prize, and yet he calls the Department of War and has been saber rattling and closing the airspace over Venezuela, and then saying no, that was a joke on Truth Social. And what's going on? There's nothing about this that is logical, reasonable, intentional, none of that. And it's a problem for the world. Clearly it's destroyed our credibility, and it's going to destroy our credibility for generations. Who's going to trust us? We may have the most sober, reasonable, competent president, and the world's going to be like, yeah, but you're one election away from another Donald Trump. And you're right. Mm-hmm. They're going to be right. You can't trust us.
Yeah, it's scary.
And instead of doing something about it, after Hegseth embarrassed Trump with Signalgate, like, he doubled down on him. It makes no sense.
Yeah. Well, he, probably because he knows. I mean, who else does he can't jettison and sideline everybody. We don't see J.D. Vance at all anymore. I mean, he just doesn't, you know, which if you notice, that started back during the campaign after the having sex with the sofa story got big. He was sidelined. Y'all, check me on that. Check me. I'm telling you, that's what happened. You know, and I can imagine dude was like, yo, y'all didn't tell me about the sofa. Did y'all vet the sofa? And Trump probably lost it. So Hegseth, if you jettison Hegseth, I mean, how many sycophants do you have left before even some of them start pulling a Marjorie Taylor Greene and also start pulling with some others and doing saying, I'm out of here.
There's lots of rumors that Kash Patel is on the hot seat over at the FBI.
Because I mean, really, he can't get rid of both of them in the same week. Because right now, Kash is they probably have skates on him today. We can see that coming. That's just not going to work.
Yeah.
So you can't. He's got to do something. You're going to get rid of the FBI director and Secretary of Defense in the same week. That is a true reflection in the same day. That is a true reflection. So you got to say, with Pete a little longer, because you need a couple more days to get Kash out. Then maybe in New Year you can get rid of Pete.
Yeah,
but you can't order.
And you know,
that's not a rumor. The man said, kill them all.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's what happens when you hire the worst people for the job. They don't even have the self-awareness to go like, oh, crap, like, I'm now a liability to the president that I support. Maybe I should resign and come up with some cover story about spending time with my family and spare this president that I love so much this much aggravation and embarrassment. They clearly don't think that.
No,
they
don't get it, and they don't understand politics and news. So that's how it happened in the old days, folks. You ease on it. Oh, you know, I don't want to be a burden. I don't want to be a distraction. And it is out of the news cycle within an hour.
Yeah.
This new cycle. So what'd you say, Marcos?
This new cycle, like, yeah.
Yeah, it's gone.
This fan of nothing.
So let me tell you, I learned some of the day. I mean, we know the news cycle is rabid right now and carnivorous. And it just, y'all, one of the greatest movie actors in history died. Robert Redford. It was in the news cycle for like an hour. Think about that, Marcos.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I respect Robert Redford. He's a good actor, you know, but, you know, he's you know, he's not somebody I worship, so to speak, but I feel kind of bad. I was like, whoa, y'all don't even care about Robert Redford. What chance do Marcos and I, who never started in a movie, how long are people going to talk about us when we're gone? That's scary. So, yeah, man, you resign today, Pete, and you might be able to get a job somewhere. You know, you still get the alcoholism allegations.
Yeah.
He's still going to be accused of alcoholism. He's probably drunk. We say, kill them all. Kill them all. And see, what's worse about this is, you know, military shouldn't obey those orders. So I do disagree with those who follow through with that. But I'm thankful for those who snitched on it.
Mm-hmm.
See, they could have just said, we're not going to do it. But it sounds like, Slick, is that what you want? Got it recorded. It's everywhere. Yeah. Cash with the girlfriend and giving her security.
Yeah.
And he's showing up at press conferences saying crazy statements you can't even see over the podium. No, this is something has to happen. Before we go, I must, because, you know, we do behave badly sometimes. Oh, for fun. Have you all seen Marcos's headline for the Tennessee 7 is really. It's Marcos. It's on brand. So here's his headline when he wrote about the Tennessee 7. As it happened, y'all. And he's kind of summed it up today. There. The GOP is effed in 2026, y'all.
There.
And, I think we can say Emily Singer also wrote a piece of Daily Coast about the amount of money that was spent in that. And that's not good either. They said spent a lot of money to take on Afton Bain or to defeat Afton Bain. So, folks, this is what we can do. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, if they have to spend that much money to defend a Trump 22-point district, they don't have enough money to go to hold the House. Not even close.
Yeah.
And that's even including with the Supreme Court slow-walking the decision on the Texas redistricting, because that is clearly unconstitutional based on conservative precedent.
Right.
So what they're trying to do is a candidate filing deadline is in 1 week. Less, I think it's on Monday or next Tuesday. And I think...
Oh, wow. Really? Okay.
And they're trying... So they're trying to slow walk the temporary hold on that decision until after the candidate filing deadline. So they can say like, oh, too late for us to do anything about it. We'll just make it illegal next time. So again, this is the Republicans on the Supreme Court putting their finger, but even that may not be enough. And I've been saying they diluted so many districts in Texas to get that plus five, that in a election, if we see like a plus 13, even like a plus eight, plus seven shift towards the Democrats in 2026 next year, they may rue having redistricted Texas because they've actually weakened a lot of incumbent Republicans. So I suspect, Mark, that a lot of those incumbent Republicans in Texas are privately rooting for the Supreme Court to throw out that new map.
Wow. Yeah, probably right. Probably so. Probably.
Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Marcos Melitzis, Thursday Coast. Glad you're back. Glad everyone. I hope everyone did have a wonderful beginning to the holiday season and make it a meaningful one and think about those who have not. And we can vote that way too. Sometimes we can vote for ourselves, but other times we can vote for people. Some of us have some, but other folks don't have anything as a result of our politics today. You can vote on their behalf too, to make sure that not only you have something, they have something as well. Let's keep this momentum going, y'all. Let's not give it up. There was a lot of enthusiasm in Tennessee the other night. And that's good. That's what I said before. We've got him since the elections several Tuesdays ago. I was concerned because our side tends to lose momentum and we think we only have to do one thing one time and that's it. No, let's maintain this momentum, folks. Also a reminder, stop spending money with corporations that don't support your agenda, that don't support DEI, and that support what Trump is doing. Think about that. Educate yourselves on that. Marcos, good to see you, buddy. Thank you.
Very much. Yeah, catch you next week.
Thanks for getting woke and listening to Make It Plain. As always, perform an act of kindness on behalf of an elder or young person. Write a letter to a sister or brother who just so happens to find her or himself incarcerated. Offer libations to the ancestors upon whose sturdy shoulders we all now stand. And above all, give thanks to the God of your understanding by whatever name you call her and him. All God asks of us is that we give each other love. Thanks for giving MIP love. And please remember to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. If all hearts and minds are clear, it has been made plain.